It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so I'm gonna do something that I try never to do at all, like on the podcast or anytime.
Okay.
I'm gonna do something nice for Azhatalin.
Oh.
Yes. So, a while back, quite a while back now, Azhatalin wrote me an email. Not the hat, wrote me an email.
You, okay.
Saying he had a friend who was moving to the Iowa City area and wondered if I had anything to say in terms of gaming places, gaming events, things like that. And
sure.
I was like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And then I forgot.
Oh.
And then I'm like, oh, I should really do that. And then I forgot. And I'm like, I really need to get back to that. And then I forgot. And literally just now, while I'm sitting here waiting for you, I realized that I always seem to remember when we're going to do the podcast. And I'm like, after this is done, I should go do that. And I don't remember. And I'm like, he listens to every single episode. He's the only person who has listened to every single episode except you. And you don't count.
I think there's one I didn't listen to.
Well, then he's the only one who's listened to every single episode. So he'll listen to this, so I can just tell him, and then go from there. So, hello, Blue Claw. In answer to your question from an earlier time period, 19-something, I believe there are two gaming stores in town. Three. Hobby Corner.
Which is near here.
Which is near here, and which is a general hobby store, so it's less focused on gaming, but it has games. I think it has gaming nights. Geek City, which is in Coralville.
It's in North Liberty now.
It's in North Liberty now. Mm-hmm. So it's further, but it's still in the general vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
And it has gaming nights, and it's where the monthly thing that Dave of It does is there.
Well, every other month, because he's in Cedar Rapids for like 1 month, and then they'll be down here and then up there.
Oh, okay.
Alternating months.
All right. Cedar Rapids isn't that far, so that could also work.
That's right.
And then Critical Hit, which I believe is still on Gilbert, so it's not quite downtown.
I don't know.
Sort of the east side of downtown. Critical Hit Games, which is, again, a gaming store, and so it probably has gaming nights also. As far as events are concerned, the big one is GamaCon. I say big. The one of significance, because it's just about gaming, is GamaCon, which Azhatalin should be familiar with. He's gone to it multiple times, probably more times than I've gone to it. Icon is also in town here, and it has a gaming component. I think that's mostly it for near here.
Does Anime Iowa ever have a gaming aspect to it? Or?
Possibly, but isn't that always in Des Moines now?
Oh, I didn't know. I thought it was still in Coralville at the Marriott.
Maybe it's the Coralville at the Marriott. If it is, you can check Anime Iowa, see if it has a gaming component. It might. I don't know. I have never been. So that's that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world clinically proven to reduce acne. I'm pretty sure there are no requirements on what you call a clinic. One time I had a zit, and then after recording the podcast, it went away. Not like immediately, but like, you know, eventually it went away. So, clinically proven.
I guess.
Holds up as much as most of the other things.
Sure.
I once saw a commercial for a skin tag remover, like a chemical one or something. Like, it was a liquid. It wasn't like, you know, here's these metal serrated teeth. It was like a thing you put on skin tags and they go away.
Okay.
I'm a fat guy. I have a lot of skin tags. And I actually almost thought about it. And then they mentioned it was homeopathic.
What?
And then I was like, never mind. So it's water. So you're going to sell me water.
Yeah.
All right.
Just
yeah,
water.
No, I'm good. Thanks.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. What, homeopathy? You are correct. It's not. Anyway, I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 384.
That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just letting William know our crazy recording schedule for the future. Because next week, we're going to have to do two of them.
Because
the week after that, I'm going to be in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week after that, we'll have to do two of them again. Because the week after that is a Riff Tracks live show beaming to movie theaters everywhere, including ours down the street here, of Krull. And I am so freaking excited. Go to RiffTracks.com if that sounds exciting to you. Thursday, August 23rd is the original, and then they're going to do an encore on the 25th. RiffTracks is a bunch of the guys who used to be on Mystery Science Theater, and Krull is one of the most awesome movies ever, where the actors act harder than any other movie. They act really hard. They act so hard. I'm surprised nobody burst a blood vessel just from acting in that movie.
Well, maybe they did.
And it has a baby Liam Neeson and a baby Robbie Coltrane in it.
Oh. That's interesting.
Have you never seen Krull?
No.
Oh, my God. You got to see Krull.
Does it really seem like the kind of movie I might have seen?
Oh, it's an awesome movie.
What's awesome
I don't know
about
what kind of like. They act really hard.
You keep saying that, but
they do.
That doesn't make it awesome.
They do. It was one of those attempts to cash in on Star Wars, but it was done with a pretty decent budget. I think a lot of its commercial failure was the timing. I think it was done either like 3 days before or 3 days after Jedi came out.
Mm.
So fucked it all up. But it's kind of an impressive sci-fi fantasy movie. It's a science fiction movie where but technically, technically the big scary demon monster is an alien from another planet and stuff like that. But it's pretty fantasy-ish. and the thing is, it has the coolest like holy weapon ever. Which is why kids my age, I was just at the right age for this. That was so cool because it basically looks like a starfish, but then like blades come out of it. Like it's got like six, I think, or maybe I think it is just five, like legs. There's like a jewel in the middle, and then there's these golden just arcs that come out of it. And then when you do the right thing, like blades come out and you throw it. And
I see.
It's very awesome.
Okay, I'll have to take your word.
And I don't know, it did good. It's definitely a movie of its time, and it's got some silly, dumb stuff and things like that. But it's pretty well acted. It actually has, in my opinion, non-annoying comic relief in it.
Hmm.
There's the wizard character, and he's kind of like, there's an ongoing thing that he keeps trying to cast these spells to change into fearsome creatures, and he changes into dumb stuff and things on accident. But, like, I don't know. He's a good comic relief. He's pretty vague. He has an odd relationship with the little kid they have with him. Where he, like, tells his title, which is this very long, long, long title. And the kid's like, that's impressive. And he's like, my name is Titch. And he's like, that's not impressive, but adequate. It's definitely adequate.
Adequate.
Okay, for those of you just joining us, here's how this show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Servants draw the note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. You guys got to tell me again. This is one of those things where, like, we're way more quiet than the intro and outro, because the little visualization thing is pretty lame looking. So I don't know if that's what that means or what. I don't know how to podcast. I've been doing it for over 7 years. I don't know how to do it, and so I need your help. So let me know how it sounded. Yeah. So how's your week been, dude?
Not really anything interesting to talk about. On the way over here, I heard that a tornado touched down in Marion County, where my dad lives.
Oh, my goodness. Is everybody okay?
Well, I don't know. I just heard it on the way over here.
Oh, my.
Pella is... I mean, that's not... My dad doesn't live in Pella.
Think
but
of all the windows.
But since he got married, he spends a lot... He's in Pella quite often, because that's... His wife has family there. So... I guess I'll just have to find out when I get home. I'm sure it's fine, because it was probably just a touchdown, like, outside of town or whatever. That's usually the case. But I just heard on the way over here, so I'll have to check when I get home.
Dang.
But no, I mean, nothing really. I mean, there's a lot of things going on this week, but nothing really interesting to talk about. What about you?
Last night, finally saw 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
Oh.
And you remember this film, because you saw this film.
Yes, I did.
People have been wanting me to see this film. You didn't care if I saw this film.
I did
but
not.
Other people cared.
I did not.
I didn't know a lot going in. Here's what I knew going in, so I'm going to share it with the rest of y'all. Because I'd seen a trailer. So it's a movie where Frances McDonald plays a woman whose daughter was raped and killed. And after 7 months, there's no leads, no suspects, no nothing. And she doesn't think the police are doing shit about it. So she... rents 3 billboards that basically say raped while dying, 7 months and still no arrests, why not Sheriff Willoughby, who's the local sheriff. And what ensues is a sort of battle in the town between this woman with her billboards and the sheriff. This was what I knew going in. Oh, and Woody Harrelson plays the sheriff. That's the sum total of what I know going in. But also that it had won a fair number of awards.
Yeah, it did pretty well in the awards.
And that it seemed like a fairly polarizing film.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Most people who saw it either thought it was pure genius or hated it, as near as I could tell.
Oh.
There weren't a lot of people, except maybe William, who you seemed to be like, meh, about it,
right.
Basically.
That's right.
I had the exact opposite reaction. And my wife had a different reaction than I did. My wife and I both agree on the following. We think it is an amazing film. I think it is very well shot. I think it is very well produced. I think the acting throughout is deserving of awards. I mean, Frances McDonald's always a powerhouse. It's probably my favorite Woody Harrelson performance ever. Sam Rockwell plays a character that I genuinely don't think any other actor could have played. Just great performances all around. Really well-crafted, thought-out script, in my opinion.
Okay.
And in my wife's opinion, as near as I can tell. Where we differ is that she really liked the film, and I hated it with the blazing passion of 1,000 Suns.
Even though you had all those positive things to say about it?
They should be super proud of this movie. It is the biggest... It is an incredibly good argument, in my opinion, for the eradication of humans as a species. It is a weird-ass nihilist fairy tale. The gist of the movie is everyone pretty much sucks, and bad shit happens to everyone. And sometimes people are kind of good a little bit, but they'll inevitably be shitty again. And whether or not good or bad things happen to them will have no bearing on whether or not they were good or bad before. Just shitty things will happen a lot. Like, it's so... I hated everybody. Everybody in that movie sucked. Tons of people did terrible things for which there was no punishment or recompense or redemption, really, ever. And yet later we're supposed to kind of like them. A lot of really horrible things happened that were sort of glossed over. And in the process of all of this, there's a lot of very homespun, cute, funny moments in the film amongst these terrible people. But it's by no means is it a black comedy, because these things are felt, at least to me, poignantly. These people do terrible stuff that felt very real to me, and we're sort of supposed to believe that it's fine, I guess. And that small towns are a disaster, that they just basically make up their rules as they go along, and they burn down buildings, and they throw people out of windows, and they literally torture people. But it's kind of funny, whatever, you know. I hated it. But it's a really good movie. And I think a big part of it is I feel like this is the worst time in the world for this movie to be coming out.
Why is that?
Because the world sucks really bad right now. And this is just a movie about how much the world sucks.
I guess. I mean, I just thought it was not a very well-written script. I didn't feel like it said anything. I mean, all the stuff you're saying that it seemed to be saying, and
To me, it felt very character study-ish, but it was just a whole bunch of horrible characters.
I guess. I mean, I didn't...
Because I was hanging on every scene. I was never bored. I was very invested.
Oh, gosh.
But I just hated it.
I was not engaged at all. I thought it was completely uninteresting. I didn't care enough about what was going on in the characters to be up to hate them or like them or care about what was going on with them.
I was fascinated.
Not me.
And I, yeah, like, certain people I thought I liked, and as it went on, I'm like, oh no, they suck too. It's such a thing that, like, we've still been talking about it, even though I didn't like it. Trish liked it a fair bit. I get this feeling that this sort of nameless difference between Trish and I, that is the same thing I think that's tied to that whole our different feelings about family and what that means. I think this... Our feelings on this movie are along those same lines somehow. I feel like it's the same issue that we're dealing with there. But, no, I was very impressed with the movie. I just really hated it.
I mean, the film's kind of... I actually don't remember very much about it because it was so uninteresting to me. And I still can't understand. I mean, except for what you're telling me, I can't understand why it even got any award attention of any kind. But...
Also, Peter Dinklage is in it. He's amazing, as always.
If I recall...
He has a very small but very poignant role.
Yeah, I forgot that. If I recall, though, this all takes place in a very rural...
Yes, a very small town in Missouri.
Okay. And so, I'm watching this. In Missouri? Oh, yeah, Missouri. Yes. That's right.
It's in the title.
It's in the title.
The town of Ebbing, Missouri, in fact.
Okay, so...
has three billboards outside of it.
So, being from a small town in Iowa, which, if this is a real town, is probably no more than 2 or 3 hours from where I grew up, because I grew up in South Central Iowa, so Missouri is actually pretty close.
South Central, y'all.
I probably felt a little bit like the surroundings were familiar.
Okay.
Or maybe I expected they would be.
Okay.
But I did not recognize these people. I did not recognize this town. I didn't recognize these motivations. I didn't recognize these behaviors.
That does not surprise me at all. I would not remotely have expected that anything about your upbringing would have been familiar in this.
It just seemed, I guess it seemed to me like some kind of a fantasy, which meant that it didn't say anything about human beings or the world or people or what. I mean, no more than a Coen Brothers movie. I mean... Coen Brothers movies are so over the top in terms of how it portrays human behavior. I don't look at a Coen Brothers movie and say, wow, that is showing me that people suck. I mean, it's showing me that those people in the Coen Brothers movie suck. And that's kind of how I felt about this movie. It wasn't saying anything about anything real. It was.
I will agree. This felt a lot like a Coen Brothers movie to me.
It was pretty over the top for how people behave. So I just didn't get anything out of it. You know, even the thing about her losing her daughter. And there were a lot of things that they connected up with that seemed sort of tacked on. I didn't connect with it at all. It just seemed like I said, a Coen Brothers movie. Totally fantastical. It's not how people really are. It's just something they concocted to tell a story that probably has some kind of a point, but I didn't know what the point was. I mean, in a Coen Brothers movie, I know what the point is. It's a dark comedy. I get it. I get that for some reason. This was not, as you said, this was not really a dark comedy. This was just dark nothing. So it didn't mean anything to me. But I don't know. Now, what you're saying is that it's coming at a bad time because there's so many bad things going on. So I didn't connect it up with the things that are going on in the real world at all. So maybe that's another reason why it didn't resonate with me. It just was nothing.
Yeah, no, they felt fairly authentic to me, these characters. Yeah, not in that I've met them. I don't know. Sadly, I don't sympathize, but I can empathize a little bit with them. They all were, to use a thing that the movie also had that I find I love out of Southern linguistic culture, the use of powerful as an adverb. They were all powerfully stupid and powerfully narcissistic. I used an actual adverb. Sorry, I'm supposed to say they were all powerful stupid and powerful narcissistic. But I wasn't confused by anybody's actions. I didn't like them, but I absolutely knew like why they decided that and things.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I was confused, but maybe I was. I mean, but this happens to me all the time. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you or on the podcast, but a lot of times my wife and I are watching a movie or something, and I have to ask her what's going on. What's happening? I don't understand why is that person acting that way? What just happened? And she has to explain to me a lot of times, well, this person's, I mean, I don't know what she has to explain to me, but usually it has to do with, a lot of times it has to do with like romantic stuff, like someone being jealous of somebody else. And I didn't really understand. I didn't know that was going to happen, or I don't understand why that's happening. But it's not just that, it's lots of things. So it could be that my wife and I didn't really talk about the movie because I think mostly because I didn't get any of it. Maybe there were parts of it she understood and got and didn't like, and so she didn't really talk to me about it. But I frequently have to ask my wife what's happening in a movie because I don't understand what the storytellers are trying to convey. And now, she has to explain it to me.
This is an idea that just now popped into my head. So it could be easily refuted in a moment's notice. But is it possible you don't have a lot of firsthand experience with a diverse cross-section of people? And I don't mean demographically necessarily, but just the kinds of people you've encountered in your life.
Well,
because there frequently seems to be things like this where you're like, why would people act that way? And I'm like, you've never, this happens all the time.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of times when she explains something to me, my next question is, does that happen? I mean, is that a thing?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, maybe you haven't interacted with that larger breadth of humanity.
No, well, I'm sure I haven't, because here's the thing. When I was, first of all, from to the time I was 18 years old, I was total homebody. I mean,
well, and you know, small town upbringing in the Midwest. I mean, everybody, there's not a lot of breadth for anybody at that point.
Right, but I mean, there are things I found out later about people in town that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't interact with people in town. I, when I got home, I stayed home. I mean, mom and dad even had some trouble with me because they'd want me to drive someplace or do something or go somewhere and do something. I just didn't want to do it. And then when I got to college, of course I experienced a number of different people there, but not a whole lot.
Well, it was University of Iowa, yeah.
And I was married on my 20th birthday, and my wife and I, first wife, stayed home a lot. A lot of my activity in my 20s was with a church with people that had very similar outlook and beliefs that I had. Now, this wasn't something I was doing on purpose, and I was actually quite aware of the fact that I probably lived in a bubble. I didn't want to, and I tried to get out, you know, whatever. But there's only so much you can learn without, like, actually, you know, knowing certain people or going to certain things and living a certain life. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of secondhand information that I got, but the stuff that I'm constantly asking my wife about is stuff that you would only know if, I don't know, you went to a lot of college parties or you had a friend who belonged to an especially dysfunctional family or whatever. You know, you'd have to experience this somewhat firsthand. So, yeah, I would say that's what you're saying is correct. I've only known it's close, intimately or in a very close, friendly way, a limited number of people. And what I found over my life is that there are a lot of things that happen that I don't even register that other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes sometimes I'm in the group of people, right? Like you and I will be in this group of people. Something will happen. Everybody else will get what that thing is and its significance. I won't. And then a year or two down the road, I might be talking to you and you'll be like, how can you not understand that? Remember that time such and such happened? And I'll be like, I don't remember. I don't remember that, you know, because you perceived it differently and probably correctly as compared to me, because it's not just what I experience. It's what I notice and register and process, right? So I'll go into a situation and I won't even know what the significance of something is. It almost always relates to things that are very subtle, right? Like a person will say something and they don't really mean that thing.
Uh-huh.
And I might not realize they didn't really mean it. I might think they did really mean it. That's how it registers in my head. And I go on like that person, you know, and someone else will have to tell me, no, they didn't really mean that, or that really hurt their feelings or whatever. And it completely escaped me because of what they said and how they acted. So yeah, it gets complicated, but
that's,
I mean,
very interesting.
But I'm constantly asking my wife.
I was being sarcastic.
Mean.
It's not interesting at all.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Actually, this is. I feel like this may change my perspective on you. This may be a very important piece of the puzzle, as it were.
Well, you know, I was talking to,
like, this. A lot of things are like.
I was talking to Jazz about this recently, and we were talking about why I haven't historically consumed a lot of fiction, and why even today fiction doesn't resonate much with me. And it's probably because there's a lot of things I just don't even understand. There's a there's a subtlety to it that other people don't think is subtle, but I do. And I was also suggesting that maybe one of the reasons I like 19th century literature is because it's in the romantic genre and it's very in your face.
Yeah.
It's almost like a, I don't want to offend anybody by this comparison, but it's almost like a person on the autistic spectrum who has a hard time reading faces. So the more dramatic the face is, the easier they can read it. So I read this fiction and it's all so overwrought.
It's very heavy-handed and explicit in its subtext.
Right. And I know it's overwrought. I know that it's overdone, but I also understand it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think there are other things that are subtle and I think they're supposed to affect you in a maybe an unconscious or profound way, and it just looks to me like, why should I care about this? I don't get it. So
interesting.
So Jazz and I were talking about that, and that was kind of an interesting insight that I never really thought about before. But this might have been a movie, this Three Billboards movie, that, because sometimes I don't know I should ask my wife what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And so I could watch a whole movie, get nothing out of it, and then I might tell her, I didn't really get anything out of that. And if she didn't like it, she might say the same thing, but she means something completely different than I mean.
Yeah.
And then we won't talk about it because we think the other person saw it the same way.
Yeah.
When really, she got a lot of nuance from it that she just didn't like, and I didn't get anything from it because it was too nuanced for me to understand.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I find it interesting that even though you didn't like it, you got a lot of stuff from it. Like,
yeah, and I really thought it was an incredibly well-crafted film.
Huh.
It was just about shit I didn't want to see.
Huh. Well, it might just be one of those things where I just don't get it.
This is interesting. I'm going to have to think on this. This might shed a whole new light on things. Huh. All right, well, we're half hour in, and we got to hit the big thing, so. We got to talk about my time at the gym.
Yeah. You sent an email about this, so I know what you're going
to talk
about.
I did, yes. I sent an email to all the males I could think of that I had emails for. If you're a male and you weren't on the list, I apologize. I either forgot I had your email, or, I mean, like, one of my closest friends who I see all the time, who I actually talked to at work, was like, hey, you've been quiet today, and I'm suddenly like, holy shit, I didn't even send it to you. And so, like, I forgot a lot of people, and I apologize, but you're going to hear about it now. So, the other morning, well, I need to back up further. As listeners largely know, I have been sort of working to expand my boundaries and my perspective lately in terms of prejudice, specifically racism, and secondarily sexism. And partially because of those efforts, and partially by sheer coincidence, I've been encountering things that are giving me new perspective and making me realize that I don't know as much as I'm always thinking that I know about things.
Sure.
And I talked about, you know, reading The Root regularly, and I talked about a lot of the fiction media, Get Out, Atlanta, things like that. And I'm getting real riled up about this shit and getting to where I'm like, us white men need to stop doing anything. Like,
just get out of people's way.
No, but I mean, but on a more serious level, yeah, that's the thing. Like, getting out of the way as opposed to doing anything active. And I'm like, I hate that.
Yeah.
I want to be a part of the solution, but other than absenting myself, I don't know how. And it again hit home because Trish and I finally watched Nanette, which you and Jazz were talking about, and I kind of glossed over it because I didn't want spoilers and I didn't care. It is a comedy special on Netflix. This is an Australian female comic. I'd never heard of before. That's not her name. Her name's Hannah something. It's named Nanette for silly reasons that don't matter here. I highly recommend it. You need to approach it with an open mind. I don't really want to get too much into it. But you need to be prepared for whatever's showing up. But it's a hell of a comedy special. She's quite funny. I didn't know she existed.
I watched Rape Jokes, by the way.
Oh, I still haven't watched Rape Jokes yet.
I forgot to tell you.
Good?
There aren't really any rape jokes in it.
All right.
It's just talking about it.
All right.
I just thought I'd mention that real quick. And yes, it is good. You probably like it.
I've been planning to watch that one.
You'll
actually
like it.
After I read a couple of reviews about it, I'm like, actually, I'm kind of excited about this.
No, yeah, I think you'll like
it. But Nanette gave me literal nightmares.
Oh, wow.
I don't think everyone would have that reaction. A lot of men might, because there's some very intense stuff in there that hit me hard and jostled my perspective.
Sure.
In a big way.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was at the height of this, what am I supposed to do other than nothing?
Yeah, yeah.
And after I had this in the wee hours of the morning, the day after we saw it, I realized there's one thing I can do. As, for the sake of this discussion, straight white male, it's not accurate, but, you know, socially, that's basically where I am. There's one thing you can do. You can talk to other straight white males or other straight people, other white people. You can speak to the other people who are part of the problem and say, hey, you're part of the problem.
Yeah, we've talked about this in relation to racism. Like, you know, what, I don't remember what, how it came up, but you and I were talking about how we can talk to other white guys.
Yes.
You know, it's not really our place to say anything to anybody else.
And it's not our place to tell black people how to handle it.
No,
it's not our
no.
place to say how to fix racism
or what
marginalized people should do, but we can absolutely say to other white guys, not like that's not fair to this person, but I, another white guy, fucking hate what you're doing.
That's right. Exactly right.
Because it's fucking racist.
That's exactly right.
And I realized this is the thing I can do.
That's right. We can do that.
And we all know this. I mentioned this in the email. We're all, I mean, if you're not, I'm surprised and fuck you. But we're all good people who are opposed to sexism and opposed to racism and believe, at least on a certain level, that it is a systemic, institutionalized issue.
Yes.
And I think a lot of other people are like me in that we've talked about how, like, we don't have a lot of opportunity available to stand up for this because we live in a world that it doesn't come up as much.
Right.
And I love to have fantasies about the time I can't. Like, I read of other people being harassed or whatever. I'm like, I could be the one to come in. And, you know, like, oh, there's some Muslims on the bus and people are giving them shit and I could stand up and I would. But that's the thing. It's not that tough. We all would. And everybody would say, hey, you did good, and, you know, except the assholes. But who cares what they think? Right. And we'd feel good about ourselves. And we all want this to happen. This is awesome. I mean, we don't want it to happen, but we want the opportunity to do this. But it doesn't come up. And I'm sad. Not that it doesn't come up, but that I don't have a chance, you know, this kind
right,
of thing.
Right, right.
So, cut two. I'm at the gym.
This is a great story, by the way.
And a person I am familiar with at the gym is talking to another, a guy who works at the front desk at the gym.
Yeah.
And he said, for the sake of simplicity, we're going to call the gym member Joe and the front desk worker Steve. And Joe says, from his machine that he's on, I'm across the gym from them.
Right.
Not near them. And Joe's not really close to Steve either, but he's close enough. And he says, hey, Steve, are you there? Because it's sort of around a corner a little bit. And he's like, yeah, what do you need? And he says, nothing, just stay there. And then I see two women coming out of a room further down.
Sure.
And they walk by Joe, and they make small talk with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And they walk by the front desk, and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear Joe say, you understand now? And Steve, like, laughed or something. I don't know what Steve said exactly, but I heard Joe say, that just makes it all the better.
So the point being, the one guy was alerting the other guy to heads up because they were going
to
see
somebody
some cute,
hot to check
yeah,
out.
Yeah, some cute girls
coming. And I know this sounds circumstantial, so you have to understand, I know Joe does this. In the past, he's done it with me. I have approached him, and he had the stupid grin on his face, and I'm like, what? And he just kind of nods his head forward, and he says, I love whoever invented yoga pants. And I look, and there's a woman on the elliptical, and he's done this with me before. I have just chuckled and sort of moved on. And I'm across the room, but I can hear them across the room.
Right.
And nobody else seems to be able to. And I'm a big eavesdropper, and I'm fairly observant about such stuff, so I'm pretty sure nobody else noticed or paid any attention.
Sure.
But you don't know that. Somebody could have heard. And somebody could have put it together.
Sure.
And that would be horrible.
Right, right.
And I realize this is one of those moments.
Yeah.
But it's not a cool one. There's not an audience. It's not some random asshole.
It's not going to go viral.
It's a guy I know.
Yeah.
And another guy I know. And I'm also not going to be like, hey, you fuckers, stop. Like, if I do something, it's going to be over to talk to them. It's going to be private between us. And it's not going to be cool at all. And it's okay, the thought's going through my head. Because the thing, I still had like two sets left to do on the particular weight machine I was on. So I finished them up while thinking about this.
Sure, sure.
And I changed my mind about four times. And all the thoughts went through my head. Like, not any of my business. Wasn't my conversation.
Right.
Yep. Clearly the women didn't hear. Mm-hmm. Probably nobody else heard.
Yep, those are all the thoughts that go through your
everybody
head for sure.
Knows, you know, that, like, whatever.
Right.
And I decided, no, this is the point. Like, this is literally the problem.
Yep.
We're all going to fucking stand up when somebody's yelling racial slurs at somebody, or when people are catcalling, we're all, and by which I mean the decent part of humanity. I know there's assholes that won't, but I mean all the fucking people I care about, we're going to do that. Most of us are going to do that. We're decent people. We're going to do that. That's not what this is. This is the bit that we all let slide because it's not comfortable. And because it's small, or it seems small, and because we're not involved, and we're just going to skip it. And I've done it before, as evidenced by the fact that I just told you I did it before with this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I decide I can't do that. So I go over after I'm done, and I go over to him, and he says, hey, how's it going? I say, hey. And I said, just so you know, if I can hear you purring on the girls from all the way over there, anybody here could hear it.
Right, right.
And he gets kind of a smirk on his face. Mm. With the benefit of hindsight, I think it kind of might have been an embarrassed expression.
Sure, sure, sure.
At the time, it just seemed very flippant.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, whatever. And so I said, immediately, I'm like, well, and this is the problem, confrontation, stuff like this, I get, my temper flares really fast, and I start getting very emotional. Mm-hmm. So I said to him, I'm like, it's not fucking funny. And I said, how would you feel if people were checking you out while you were working out? It's creepy. And that word hit him for somebody. He's like, it's creepy. And he looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? And I said, yeah, it's creepy. And he said, oh, okay, it's creepy. And I was like, seriously, what if somebody, and he's like, no, 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 I hear you. It's creepy. Okay, fine. And I was like, he said he heard me. I don't, at this point, I'm getting embarrassed. I'm sure my face is flushed. This whole thing's terribly embarrassing. So I leave it, and I'm walking out, and I go by Steve, and I'm like, and you should know better because you just work here. And Steve says, it's just Joe. And I say, loud enough to make sure both of them can hear, then Joe is creepy. And I left. And I felt like shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been... most of that day was spent thinking about this. And much of the other, like, 2 days since it happened have been spent thinking about this.
Yeah.
And I have finally sort of figured out why I was feeling the way I was feeling. It felt pointless, for starters. I felt like nothing had happened.
Mm.
And I felt like I had just sort of embarrassed myself and kind of, you know, annoyed to acquaintance. I mean, they weren't friends, but like we chat and stuff. They're part of the early morning gym crowd. We're kind of a close-knit community because we're the stupid fuckers who get up at 5:30 and go to the gym. we're kind of a group. And I'm like, and I had just made it weird for them. There weren't any women technically. I mean, there were women who they looked at, but like no women heard this. None were involved or anything. And I don't think I had changed their viewpoints, or it didn't feel like it at the time. So it just felt like all I had done is fuck things up for myself. And at the same time, I knew it was right.
Yep, yep.
And that just sucked more. Because I couldn't be like, well, lesson learned, don't do that. Because I'm like, no, I had to do this.
No, that's right.
But like, even if you're doing something like this and there's and nobody knows, even if it's an anonymous thing,
mm-hmm.
there's that sense of, you know what, I did. There's a little bit of personal pride involved. I didn't have that here. I'm like, what did I just do, even? I don't really think anything happened. And I kind of felt like I was the bad guy.
Mm.
Because... in my head, no women were actually involved, which, of course, is bullshit because there were women being checked out.
That's right.
But no women were conscious of being involved. And I'm very anti-thought crime. If somebody wants to glance at another person out in public and think whatever heinous thoughts they want to, as long as they're keeping it to themselves, that's their business.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's when their actions, or especially their words... put it in the realm, because even if nobody hears him, what if Steve's not so discreet? And what if the next time Steve is really obvious about it or says something? And even if Steve doesn't, what if Steve repeats the same behavior and we're just normalizing this? Some guy down the line is going to suck at being subtle about this, and it's going to happen. And all it takes is once for a woman to be like, oh, that guy checks out people's butts while they're working out.
Well, but it's like you said before. If someone's looking in some direction or thinking a certain thing and keep it to themselves. We, you know, there's nothing we could or should do about that. But yes. He didn't keep it to himself.
No, he said it, and he said it loud enough that I could hear.
That's right.
And it just takes one woman to hear that and think, oh, that's what he does. And then you've got three options. You either quit that gym.
Yeah.
Or you make sure you're never there when he's there.
If you're the woman you're talking about.
Or you continue to work out, maybe feeling kind of gross.
Right.
But, and, you know, maybe you're a woman who thinks that's cool and that you like being checked and that's your thing. That's fine. That's not going to be everybody. You can't assume that by any stretch of the imagination.
That's right.
I would venture to say it's arguable that that's not going to be the vast majority of women. And so you can't do that. You can't make it their problem, whatever perverted thoughts you've got. And so I knew, but I felt like the bad guy because it felt like there was no women involved. And I am confident this guy is not a predator or anything. He's a nice old guy, whatever. I'm like, is this really a thing? But I knew it was a thing.
Yeah.
And it traumatized me for quite a while to be like, this is my life now. Like, you can't unopen that window. Mm. I'm like, because we spend our lives letting this stuff go under the radar. But now I know I'm going to have to do that every time. And it's rough. And I've talked to a lot of people about it. At first, I was worried about sort of virtue signaling. But I decided this is a weird enough thing that it should come up, because this is not, hey, I rescued some girls from being hit on by these jerks today. It's a different thing. And I got to say, not everybody responded to that email, and I'm a little sad about that. And I got into kind of an argument with a couple of people, because some people seemed to kind of get the wrong point from it.
Mm.
But a lot of people came back, and they're like, I get that. You did a good job. I've been in that situation, and I'm sad to say I didn't respond that way. But I know I should have. And so I'm glad I sent out that email. And I've talked to people more and more. And they get it. And this is not weird. Everybody agrees it was the right thing to do. And everybody understands why it was awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing and shitty thing about it is I kind of realized, I think, I'm not in a position to know, obviously, I think, on some microscopic level, for just a second of time, this was what it feels like to be marginalized. This is what is just sitting there in the background radiation of every woman's life.
That's right.
And that's amazing to theoretically have that perspective just for that one brief instant, and terrifying that it has beaten me up this much. How could I possibly live that way if, like, just this one teeny instance of it fucked me up this bad?
Right.
If I was a woman, I would kill myself in 5 minutes because I couldn't take this. How fucking weak am I?
Trish
pointed out at the time, let's talk about the fact that my privilege puts me in a situation where it is infinitely easier for me to do that than it would be for a woman.
Right.
And yet I had such a hard time and was so reluctant to do it. How fucked up is that?
Well, and the weakness you're talking about comes from privilege, right?
Yes.
Because you're...
I've never worked those muscles.
That's
of,
right.
I've never faced adversity my life.
That's right.
And I kind of know that. I have a very lucky life, and I know I have all this burden. But this was like a new layer.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm weaker than I even ever realized. Epilogue, though. I was worried about going back to the gym. I went back to the gym. I haven't talked to Joe. Not because we're avoiding each other. He comes a little later than I do. And, like, he wasn't there one of the times. And one of the times we were just in very different places. And it would have been weird to just walk over. I had thought before about, like, apologizing for my tone. But I was like, I think that's just going to weaken the whole thing.
Possibly, yeah.
But Steve, it may have been my imagination. Steve was working the next morning. And I felt like he was a little tense. But I very much read it as the same tense I was of a, where are we now? Are we still good? And I think, and we talked pretty much like we normally did, and I think it's okay. And I had forgotten that this is sort of a thing with guys. They like to pretend this shit doesn't happen. Like, that. Let's just pretend we didn't have that fight yesterday and move on.
Right, sure.
And for once, I was really thankful for that, because that's how I wanted to be, too. Like, I made my point. I'm not going back on that point. And P.S., if... That's the wrong place to put P.S. But side note, if I see it happen again, I'm going to talk to management.
Yeah.
This was my point of saying I'm not okay with this. If it happens again, I'm not talking to them. I'm just going to management. I'll say that up front. I want to give them the chance to fix it.
Sure.
And honestly, I think Steve, as Trish pointed, Steve was just sort of stuck between two clients. And he works for it, so he has to, like, you know, don't piss off that customer or this customer.
Right.
And I think it was all terribly awkward for him, too.
But that's good.
But, I mean, absolutely. And I think they're both going to remember this.
Yeah.
But I think we're sort of going to get back to normal. And right now, it's tense at the gym, and it's entirely me creating it myself. And I think that'll go away over time. And, you know, and now I get to be comfy again for a while until it comes up again. But I have to do something when it comes up again.
Well, here's something that you and I talked about this privately in email, and we can leave all that stuff there. But one thing I didn't mention that I think is worth mentioning is those grand gestures that sometimes make the news or viral videos or get passed around on Facebook are probably not ultimately near as effective as what you did.
No, because that's about protecting people from a horrible person.
But also,
this is about trying to change someone's behavior.
Right, but also, those gestures become something else.
Yeah.
They start to mean something completely different than what, you know, than just standing up for somebody.
Yeah.
This can't mean anything else. You know them personally. That makes it mean more.
I didn't know the women. In fact, I couldn't pick them out of a lineup. I didn't even see them.
You know the gentleman personally.
But what I'm saying is, it wasn't a defense of specific women, because I don't even know who they were. I didn't even see them, really.
So the fact of the matter is, even though these are the moments that we're most reluctant to do, they're probably the ones that are going to make the most impact in the long run.
I hope so.
The other things we're more willing to do, but again, they turn into an event. They turn into something that is not really what it started out being. This is why social change is so slow, because the harder things are the things we're least are they're going to be the most effective. They're the things we're least likely to do. We'll do the easier things, and they won't make as big an impact in the end. They might more people might hear about it, but it'll make less of a social impact.
And women I've talked to since then, and women I talked to before, this wasn't. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this before. Especially women who really pay attention to the sexism and like call it out and point it. Say one of the biggest issues is guys not calling other guys on their bullshit.
Yeah.
Because again, when it's just a horrible asshole, as long as he's not physically threatening you, you know he's a horrible asshole. It's just the low key bullshit that the other guys in the room seem fine with.
Yeah, yeah.
That then you become a second class citizen.
Well, I mean,
and guys, this made me feel really weird. And it is really weird if I'm the only one who does it. If we all do it, then they're the weird ones.
Well, you know, there are such a thing as gyms that are exclusively for women.
And that's because of people like Joe.
That's exactly right. And that has to be addressed.
Yep. And I mean, it's good that those exist, given the climate we're in.
Right.
How about we try and make a climate where they don't have to?
That's right. I agree.
We really got to draw something, because we're running out of time here.
The reason I said
I encourage you to watch Nanette.
The reason I said earlier that it's a good story.
I also encourage you to watch Nanette.
I did watch it.
Oh, okay. You look confused when I was talking about it.
Well, because I forgot that's what it was called.
Oh, okay.
Because remember she said she called it that
for
no particular
reason. Yeah, it's
named
after a woman. No, it was named after a woman she dated that she thought would lead to a bunch of good material and never
and
did.
No, but the reason I said it was a good story is because I think it demonstrates so many positive things. I mean, not just the fact that you did a positive thing, but just in general, I think it says a lot of interesting things about our culture and about what types of things are going to work to change our culture and what kinds of things won't.
It taught me a lot, so hopefully it can teach other people.
Yeah, I think everyone who heard it, I think, learned something.
Cue some listener in the distance going, I didn't.
Not me. Please explain space opera for non-nerds. Coffee.
Oh, first of all, fuck you. Non-nerds know space opera. It's not nerdy to know it. Okay, you're right. Never mind. Love you, Coffee.
Is it something we can nail down? I mean, it's
no, I think it has... Well, I think it has a very specific origin.
Okay.
I don't remember what it is.
I mean, Star Wars is called that.
Yes, yes, yes.
Just for
space
reference.
Opera is... okay. There's plays, and then there's opera.
Right.
And opera tells a story like any other play might, but it tells it... bigger than life. It's full of crazy people singing for 10 minutes about how they don't know if they should walk through that door or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, just huge set pieces and things like that. And that's what space opera is. It's a swashbuckling adventure movie of sci-fi.
Yeah.
It frequently is soft sci-fi.
Yeah.
And some people use the terms interchangeably. Before you have to write in again, Coffee, soft sci-fi is ones where the actual science is kind of bullshit and it's a little more fantastical.
A little fuzzy, yeah.
The extreme of soft sci-fi is what we call science fantasy, which is what Star Wars is like. We have no idea. I mean, we do now because nerds, but in the movies, we have no idea how lightsabers work and
or
shit
the
like
Jedi
that. It just,
or
it's
the
all
Force.
Magic. We just are using technology for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose the Asgardians in Marvel are science fantasy. Mm. They're a little more fantasy, but they kind of do that.
Sure.
So that's the extreme of, and a hard sci-fi is like, this is science fiction, but it's based on shit that actually theoretically could happen.
Right, right.
And that varies. But like, science fiction where faster than light travel is just not possible, and you have to come up with other crazier, slower than light ways to colonize the galaxy.
Yeah.
Harder sci-fi. Ones where we've developed warp engines, softer sci-fi,
right?
Things like that. Right. Space opera is frequently on the softer side because all the technical limitations get in the way of the exciting adventure.
So they'll come up with some technological doodad, and they won't tell you how it works. And if for example, in Star Wars, they communicate instantaneously across huge distances
without anybody paying any attention.
Now, if you're a scientific person or you have any knowledge of science, you realize that seems like that wouldn't work, but they just gloss over it for the sake of the story.
And just about all the other great science fiction stories, Buck Rogers, both the 70s TV show and the original serialized stuff, Flash Gordon, very soft sci-fi. Asimov tends to be harder sci-fi. Not always, but tends that way. It's tricky nowadays because you can do some bait and switch. You can take a basic concept that is rooted in real science and then just extrapolate it into bullshit.
Well,
a lot of movies do that.
Yeah,
now.
With Asimov, I'd say if Asimov is softer science fiction now, it's only because of things we've learned since he wrote it. Like,
yeah, and you run into that sometimes.
I mean, he wrote it as about as hard science fiction as you can get, but then as we learn new things and we read it now, it reads like he's glossing over a piece of science when really he just didn't know.
But he didn't, and in some cases he didn't know, and it would have been possible to
know.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Foundation series is pretty hard sci-fi, except for the fact that so many things are just because of atomics.
Atomics
does everything. Atomics is the goddamn force in the Foundation.
Yeah,
kind of.
That's kind of true. But I wouldn't call his story his.
I would say his is on the harder edge of sci-fi.
But also, I'd say it's epic. It's got an epic scale.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it space opera.
No, it's not space opera.
To be space opera, it's got to be.
It's an adventure movie, and you can have exciting things
adventure.
That aren't an adventure movie.
Right.
Alien, the whole Alien franchise is very soft science fiction, and it is very exciting and adventurous in a lot of cases. At least some of them are defined as action movies. I don't think of them as space opera.
No, I don't either.
It's often not real dark.
No.
I think that's a component, too. It's a very comic booky in its way, very four-color. Pulpy is a good word for
maybe
it. Pulpy is a very good word. Don't write us in an Aswell Pulpy. You got to look that one up. That's a hard one to say, but it's this. It's what we're talking about here, definitely. And then you have the other extremes, like that book I talk about, Diaspora by Chris, what's the name? I don't know. That's the hardest of hard sci-fi that's fucking dealing with the potential dimensions in geometry and 60 pages of how an artificial intelligence might literally code a new AI and give birth to it, basically. But like all, like that fucking book had a bibliography at the end. Yeah. God damn it.
Well,
that
I think
book was fucked up.
I think if you watch something that's in space or science fiction-y and you can, and if you heard someone say, they're going to make a musical out of that, or they're actually going to make an opera out of that, you could go, yeah, I can see that. It's probably space opera.
It's probably space opera.
Because, if someone said they were going to make a musical or an opera out of Star Wars, I could totally buy that.
Yeah.
I mean, even back in the day, if someone told me that, I could have bought that. But not everything's like that.
No.
Some of it I'd be like, if someone were going to make an opera or musical out of any Star Trek thing, I don't think I would.
Yep.
It would make sense to me. Although
they probably have.
They probably have. I wouldn't call Star Trek space opera, though.
I think, again, the Alien movies are a good example. If somebody's going to make a musical of the Alien movies, I absolutely fucking want to see that. But I'm like, what?
It doesn't seem to register. But if someone says that about Star Wars, you totally buy it. You could totally buy that.
Also, Coffee.
The movies, anyway.
None of this helps. Wikipedia, I'm pretty sure, has a good entry on what space opera is.
It probably
does. It'll
give
you the sources and all of that jazz, too. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that literally tells you you could learn this stuff much better on Wikipedia.
Well, it's a fuzzy concept, you know. It's
something that somebody wrote in a review in like the 60s.
Now people just
throw it around for stuff.
But somehow it resonated.
And space opera is in the eye of the beholder, I think.
Yeah, it's probably true. But I immediately think of Flash Gordon. I have
a definite vibe.
Yeah.
With it. I think Flash Gordon. I think Star Wars.
Would camp be involved with some space opera?
Potentially. That hasn't aired.
What hasn't aired?
Anything about camp.
Well, I'm asking you, though. I'm just saying,
you got that knowing look.
But camp.
Face. They can hear that knowing look. Are you saying space opera is gay?
No, I'm saying, like, even in Star Wars,
yeah,
you've got C-3PO.
It's very affected.
Yeah.
It's very overwrought in some ways.
Yeah.
No, that's... I'd say that is accurate.
You're hilarious.
I thought I had more to say, but we're over time, and so I'm not going to say it anyway. Because I don't remember what it is. If you'd like to learn more about space opera, visit your local library. also, listen again next week. It'll be part one of two. That'll be exciting. In the meantime, go to the blog and tell us why we're wrong about our definition of space opera and how I am definitely making sexism worse and all the other places Azure Talent should know about for gaming in Iowa City. Okay, bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.